actually his season started out pretty slow. He was kind of uneven. I thought he started to kind of find himself in the first meeting with Chicago, which was November 2nd, where they struggled in that game. And he did very similar to what you just saw in the recent Chicago game. It was a similar type of game where he dominated on both ends. He looked for his shot. He was confident in his shot. And he was just a force. You know, when you look at him, you know, people in Indiana have been really critical about him over the last 2 years and the way he started the season. But when you look at him with the contract, he just signed that $80 million deal. With Turner, it's all about, you know, could he live up to the life of an $80 million player over the course of 4 years? And the answer is absolutely. He might actually end up doing it in year one. And it's simply because he's a big who can step out. He's getting a little bit better at guarding smaller players when he has to switch out top. He's got a mid-range game. The next part of his game that he has to evolve is a three-point shot. He was a 35% shooter from three-point range last year. This year he's shooting somewhere in the 20s or even, I think, even below 20%. He's been reluctant to take the shot for whatever reason. But if he's able to stretch out and become that 35 to 40% three-point shooter as a five, and you know how valuable spreads are in this league.
Oh, absolutely.
You're 6 foot 11, and you put that with his defensive ability, I think it opens up an entirely new level that we haven't even seen yet. So, but he doesn't look for the shot a lot. If you look at him when he screens in these games, only recently has he screened up high enough to where when he pops off the screen, he's popping above the arc. A lot of times he'll pop to that foul line because that's where he's comfortable. And I think it's a matter of him getting in a comfort zone where he feels like he can hit that three ball. So it's kind of hit or miss when it comes to that. But if you just go off the early returns right now, he's been hot and cold, but lately he's been incredibly hot. And he's cleaned up a lot of the errors that they've had on defense, and it's pretty good to have a 6'11 guy who can do all the things that he's able to do at the rim on the defensive side.
You know, Jay, it is so interesting that you mentioned kind of that mid-range elbow shot with Miles Turner, because that was, I think, a lot of people's same frustration here in Orlando with Nikola Vucevic. Nick has always been, you know, a pretty good shooter from that 12, 13 feet range. It was stepping out and making sure that he wasn't taking those bad percentage shots that were just inside the three. Those are what are so different this year about Nick Vucevic. Yeah. So when you talk about Miles Turner in that regard, I completely understand what you're getting at.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of times, you know, last year when I came on to do this beat on the Pacers, the first observation I made of Miles was, you know, man, he's like 1 foot and step inside of the 3-point arc. Why not just take that other step, A, the extra point, and B, that the other thing that does, of course, is it opens the floor a little bit more. So even if you missed a shot, you have more seams for guys to go in and get the rebound and get the long rebound. It creates better spacing for Oladipo when he's on the floor. Whereas if you're only popping to that foul line, the defense can help down low and then recover to contest your shot because you're closer. So I think I was talking to one of his teammates who said they think it's just mental that he hasn't been used to doing that, and he just has to be confident in his ability to do that and make a conscious decision to pop higher to get that, to spread the floor a little bit better. So that's a challenge for these guys. You know, some guys this comes natural, some guys who are 6 foot 11, it does not.
Jay, you spend a lot of time watching tape, don't you? It's pretty.
I might as well be a coach's joke to me. I'm a video coordinator. So it should have been a video coordinator, because that's all I do.
It's great, man. What about Tyreke Evans? It seems like he's kind of had a mixed bag of starts with you guys. I remember the offseason, before the signing became official, he texted Victor Oladipo and said that he had his back. It's been a little bit of a slow start for Tyreke, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. I mean, you know, he got suspended for a game, the Cleveland game. I want to say that was the first or second week of the season because he was habitually late, and they had to get him in line. And he accepted it pretty well. You know, because they run a pretty tight ship under McMillan when it comes to things like tardiness. So, you know, that was a rocky start. He showed some real promise playing the pick and roll in particular with Domantas Sabonis, who's out tonight, particularly in the preseason. And I think teams started to kind of zoom in on that, take that away, and say, beat us another way. And he's had difficulty with that. The biggest issue that Tyreke has had is when it comes to holding the ball. And when I said earlier in the conversation about when they kind of things bog down, they kind of dominate the ball and isolate, he's probably the one who's the most guilty of it. Because if you look at his career, that's the way he's mostly played. And trying to play this other way, where you get the ball out of your hand, you move it, and hope that you get it back, you know, and try to make the defense move, that's not normally what he's been doing. Even since high school, that's not what he's done. So he's had to adjust to that. So as a result, what has he done? he's taken a lot of shots in traffic, contested, and that he misses. And he gets a lot of turnovers recently. Last couple games, he's done better with moving the ball. It still hasn't been quite smooth, but you can see he's thinking the game a little bit better. And I think that's the biggest challenge for him. I don't think it's physical. I think it's mental in the way he's being asked to play this year, as opposed to all the previous years in his career where, you know, he played in Sacramento, wasn't the most disciplined place in the world. He played in New Orleans really before they had only one playoff season. They weren't the team that they were last year. A really good playoff team. New Orleans was developing. So he didn't have that structure there. And so he's kind of bounced around where he hasn't really had any direction. I think this is, you know, he said this is the first time he's been at an organization where they had really, they really drilled these sorts of principles into him to be disciplined, not only off the court, but on the court as well with how you play. And I think that adjustment period, I think he'll catch up, but I think it still might take another month.
Well, it's the same thing with behavior, right? When you've done one thing for so long a certain way, like if I go out and I make my coffee and I grind my beans first before I take out my filter, it's just not going to work. But if you've done one thing for so long, forever, that is a very, very hard adjustment to make. And I don't think people fully comprehend how difficult that really is. It's easy to talk about, it's harder to do.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is, like, after his suspension, Tariq's actually really, really nice guy, really quiet, but, you know, he'll give you some really thoughtful answers. He says, look, nobody's ever asked those things to me before. He's like, these things that I got in trouble for, I've done them at other places, and no one said a thing. So, in his mind, it was okay, or it was forgivable, and So you got to retrain your thinking in the process of doing stuff, and you know, and the Pacers have been, you know, pretty stringent when it comes to that. And I think he's kind of part of the reason why he chose to come to Indiana is that he was looking for that kind of structure and discipline. There's some guys who actually want to be coached in a certain way.
Absolutely.
They want to be shown some certain direction, and I think that's what he's looking for. And I think he's taken some of the times when he's been benched early, his playing time has been cut. As a result of the way he's played recently, he's actually taken it pretty well. He hasn't been pouting about it. And I think if he's able to figure that out, and you know, basketball skill wise, the skill is there. It's just, again, playing at a quicker pace, playing at a higher, you know, not holding the ball. And that's just, you can see it when he's doing that. When he's holding the ball and he's thinking too much, you'll see it on the court. You know, nobody really has to point it out to you. He has to get past that. And I think once he gets past that part as well, things will kind of open up for him a little bit.
Right now, talking with Jay Faugas of the Indianapolis Star. Does a great job, as you guys can tell. I mean, let's not mince words about it. This team's only 24 games into their season, so the sample size is not even enough to be concerned about what's going on with Evans yet. I think that's going to come, and the goal is to always play your best basketball towards the end of the year, the middle of the year, once you kind of start get on a roll. And once they get Oladipo back, he's going to be back in his normal role, and that might help. But what about Darren Collinson? He also seems like a guy that's starting to really settle in these last eight games without victory. It seems like he's been much more aggressive.
Yeah, he has to be in order for him to win, because I'm going to tell you, man, they've had some games where he didn't play well at all. And when he doesn't play, even when Victor's on the floor, if he doesn't play well, you know, the offense can bog down. So it's not just Tariq coming off the bench and backing these guys up who falls into that. Darren, the biggest issue Darren has had is doesn't always look for a shot. The game they just lost last week in Sacramento, Sacramento extended its ball pressure. They started trapping hard and extended it, you know, and he was picking up his dribble way too soon. And instead of being insulted that they're pressuring him this way and going at him. And what you've seen in recent games, in the 23-point game he just had against Chicago, which was a season high, he went at them, and Chicago was playing aggressively with him too. Because I think the book on teams have gotten on Darren is make him uncomfortable, pressure him a bit. He'll kind of withdraw, or he'll pick up his dribble, and it'll disrupt the offense. And they don't get started in their offense too late. If he gets them into their early offense and he's aggressive when he's being pressured, I think good things tend to happen for him and the team. But he has to be a guy who's not only looking for his shot, but creating for other people and being aggressive in doing so. Because if he's not, without Victor on the floor, the team's going to have trouble getting into its half-court sets. And again, that's where they've had their most issues running their half-court.
Absolutely. Right now, talking with Jay Folgas of the Indianapolis Star. Does a fantastic job covering this Pacers team. All right, Jay, I will get you out of here on this. But I'll tell you what, if you asked me what division was going to be the best in the Eastern Conference, I think everybody probably would have said the Central Division. But I don't think anyone expected the grouping to be this tight with Milwaukee, Detroit, and you guys. What is kind of the power structure? Where do the Pacers feel that they lie in that group of three right there?
I think they realistically believe they're two behind Milwaukee. They only played Milwaukee one time. That was the second game of the season, and that was a head-splitting. I mean, guys like John Henson, who I think had only hit 1 3-point. I think John just got traded today to Cleveland, by the way.
He did.
But, you know, Henson was hitting 3-pointers in that game. I mean, that's how crazy Milwaukee was. They were not prepared for what they saw because nobody knew what Milwaukee was going to look like under Mike Budenholzer. So I think right now, realistically, they think they're the second best team in the division, but there's still a lot to be settled. You know, there's a lot of season left to play. Milwaukee's been playing at, you know, full strength, and these guys have not. So I think they believe that, you know, by the time that the season's over, even if Milwaukee finishes in that number one position, they expect to be a top four seed. And that was the goal coming into the season. I don't think they've experienced anything that leads them to believe that they won't be in that position. And I do believe this. I agree with, you know, with their philosophy on this, is that if you have a team that plays really well defensively the way they do, the struggles that they've had offensively, you can work out those kinks. But the first thing is, if you've got the defensive commitment to play the way they play every night, and particularly a guy like Corey Joseph, by the way, who I haven't mentioned, who I love coming off the bench the way he plays, then you have a team that plays defense like that, and they have some weapons offensively. The offensive stuff is going to catch up. It just might take a minute. So I think Milwaukee finishes ahead of them in the division, but in the postseason, we'll see.
Yeah, they're first in opponent's points per game, third in defensive rating, so the defense is there every night. Jay, I appreciate this so much. I'm so sorry this was kind of rushed and a cluster. It's been a rough day, but thank you so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Anytime. Good to talk to you.
Anytime. I could talk ball with you all day long. That was Jay Folgras of the Indianapolis Star. We'll have him on the podcast sometime when we can really kind of test his basketball knowledge, because I'll tell you what, that sounded fantastic. That sounded wonderful. And I think we're off to a good start here on Magic Drive Time, presented by International Diamond Center. When we return on the other side, we'll take your calls. We'll take your texts. 407-447-2145. Text line is 50857. What are your expectations the next 10, 15, 20 games? Have you seen enough to really buy into this Magic team? We'll talk about that around the bend.
When it comes to the best diamonds at the best prices in Florida, Magic fans choose International Diamond Center. It's why IDC has earned the title Exclusive Jeweler of the Orlando Magic year after year. IDC dominates the competition every day with a massive inventory of hand-selected diamonds, literally thousands of designer rings, an unparalleled selection of fashion jewelry, the guaranteed best values in America, and the strongest warranties in the jewelry industry. Learn more at shopidc.com/gomagic, where Magic fans shop for jewelry.
I'm Robert Palmer, president of RP Funding. With home values at an all-time high, smart homeowners are using RP Funding to access their home equity now more than ever. Home equity could be the best way to finance home improvements, consolidate debt, make investments, or even large purchases. But don't use your home equity to pay closing costs. Let me pay them instead. Call 855-773-8634, 855-773-8634, or visit rpfunding.com.
Terms and conditions apply. See website NMLS 701-68, equal housing.
You're listening to Magic Drive Time.
Magic Drive Time is back. I will tell you what, special thanks to Jay Michael Folgras. I thought that was a fantastic first segment. You could always tell a guy who knows his ball. Jay knows his ball, and I think Jay knows ball more than a lot of people that cover basketball in this industry. So that was a lot of fun. If you haven't heard that interview, go back to our podcast page. Listen to it. I think you're going to learn a lot about this Pacers team and about where they expect to finish within their division. I thought it was interesting he said second. I fully thought that was a very interesting nugget, because with the way the Pacers are constructed, I can see them finishing ahead of Detroit. So here's what we have coming up. Magic will take on the Pacers tonight, beginning with a 7 o'clock tip time. That is down at the Amway Center. Tickets are still available. All you have to do, go down to OrlandoMagic.com. Purchase your tickets, go see a fun basketball game, support this Magic team who continues to hover around 500 before they go out on the NBA road for their next three contests. So we originally had scheduled that we were going to do a Trending Now segment, but I do want to mention this, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it, because I'm all about organizations supporting their own characters, and I thought the Magic did something really cool today, announcing that longtime play-by-play announcer David Steele will go into the Hall of Fame on Friday, February 22nd at 4 p.m., I think it's good when employees do so much for an organization that you give back to them. And David Steele has done it for 30 years for this organization. First on the radio side, something that here with the Orlando Magic on the radio side specifically, we are partial to. And then for the last 21 years on the telecast side, I thought it was wonderful. I thought it was well-deserved. And I thought as an aspiring broadcaster, it was perfect. Cody, you look like you have something you want to say.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it couldn't go to a nicer guy. And it's something that I kind of grew up listening and watching to him and being from the area and living here when I was younger. He was a guy that I looked up to as
Absolutely.
Well. So just to be able to come and work for the organization and work alongside him and just be around him doing his thing is it's been amazing.
Look, when Vin Scully passed the torch on to the Dodgers, everyone knew Vin Scully because of the stories that he told. Broadcasters become important pieces of organizations. They take a game that a kid or an adult plays and they make it memorable based off the moments and how they deliver them. And for the last 30 years, David Steele has done that, whether it's Shaq breaking a backboard, whether it's going to the 1994-95 NBA Finals and that call of revving it up and why not us, why not now, and everything else in between. He's represented this organization in a first-class manner, and he's done it to the absolute best of his ability, and it is time that one of Florida's premier sportscasters finally gets recognized, and I thought it was fantastic. So if you go to one game and one game only this year, make it February 22nd. Go support David Steele for everything that he has done for this organization, this franchise, and this city throughout his time here. Well, that'll do it for us here on Magic Drive Time, presented by International Diamond Center. That is all I have. We're out. We're done. Magic getting set for a 7 o'clock tip time tonight. They will take on those Indiana Pacers. Like we said, tickets are still available. All you have to do is go to OrlandoMagic.com, purchase them, go down, enjoy your Friday, then go downtown and support local businesses. So we're all about supporting each other, guys. See, there was a theme today. It always comes together. Go check us out. If you want to hear more from us, go to our iTunes page. All you have to do is search Orlando Magic Radio. Click, subscribe, rate. We greatly appreciate it. Cody does a great job getting those up for us after the show. Well, that does it for us here on Magic Drive Time, presented by International Diamond Center. Dante is back on Monday.